content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. Hello and welcome to Heard Any Good Books Lately? A program from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. I'm your host, George Douglas. This monthly program is brought to you by the Friends of the North Carolina Library for the Blind and Physically Handicapped, an organization of citizens, volunteers, and patrons, all interested in supporting the library and the services that it provides. The Friends Group was founded in 1989, by the way, and now has more than 300 members across North Carolina. If you'd like to join the Friends Group yourself, we'll have information on how you can do that later in this program. Now, this program is all about books, with special emphasis on those available from the North Carolina Library for the Blind. The library has more than 86,000 titles in its collection. That includes books and magazines, available in large print and braille, and also talking books. Last month, we concentrated most of our time on novels. Well, this month, we're going to take a look at some of the most popular nonfiction books during the month of January at the North Carolina Library for the Blind and Physically Handicapped. We're going to begin with the most popular nonfiction book during January. This was number one in terms of distribution to patrons, and it's entitled That Used to Be Us by Thomas L. Friedman. Here's a summary. America has a huge problem. It faces four major challenges on which its future depends, and it is failing to meet them. In That Used to Be Us, Thomas Friedman, one of the most influential columnists, and Michael Mandelbaum, one of our leading foreign policy thinkers, analyze those challenges: globalization, the revolution in information technology, the nation's chronic deficits, and its pattern of energy consumption. And they spell out what we need to do now to rediscover America and rise to this moment. In this book, they explain how the end of the Cold War blinded the nation to the need to address these issues. They show how our history, when properly understood, provides the key to addressing them, and explain how the paralysis of our political system and the erosion of key American values have made it impossible for us to carry out the policies the country needs. They offer a way out of the trap into which the country has fallen, which includes the rediscovery of some of our most valuable traditions and the creation of a new third-party movement. That Used to Be Us is both a searching exploration of the American condition today and a rousing manifesto for American renewal. As we were writing this book, Friedman and Mandelbaum explain, we found that when we shared the title with people, they would often nod ruefully and ask, "But does it have a happy ending?" Our answer is that we can write a happy ending, but it is up to the country, to all of us, to determine whether it is fiction or nonfiction. We need to study harder, save more, spend less, invest wisely, and get back to the formula that made us successful as a country in every previous historical turn. What we need is not novel or foreign, but values, priorities, and practices embedded in our history and culture, applied time and again to propel us forward as a country. That is all part of our past. That book is entitled That Used to Be Us by Thomas L. Friedman and Michael Mandelbaum. It was the most popular book from the North Carolina Library for the Blind during the month of January, and definitely sounds like a good one. The second most popular nonfiction book during the month of January was Living Beyond Your Feelings by Joyce Meyer. The average person has 70,000 thoughts every day, and many of those thoughts trigger a corresponding emotion. No wonder so many of us often feel like we're controlled by our emotions. Our lives would be much improved if we control them. In Living Beyond Your Feelings, author Joyce Meyer examines the gamut of feelings that human beings experience. She discusses the way that the brain processes and stores memories and thoughts. And then, emotion by emotion, she explains how we can manage our reaction to those emotions. By doing that, she gives the reader a toolbox for managing the way we react to the onslaught of feelings that can wreak havoc on our lives. Now, in this book, Meyer blends the wisdom of the Bible with the latest psychological research, and she discusses, first, the four personality types and their influence on one's outlook, the impact of stress on physical and emotional health, the power of memories, the influence of words on emotions, anger and resentment, sadness, loss and grief, fear, and guilt and regret, the power of replacing reactions with proactions, and the benefits of happiness. By the way, Joyce Meyer is one of the world's leading practical Bible teachers. She's a number one New York Times best-selling author. She's written more than 80 inspirational books, including The Secret to True Happiness, 100 Ways to Simplify Your Life, The Entire Battlefield of the Mind, and many more. She's also released thousands of audio teachings as well as a complete video library. Again, that book was entitled Living Beyond Your Feelings by Joyce Meyer. Many of the most popular nonfiction books that go out to patrons in any given month tend to be of a more spiritual nature, and that is the case with this one that we're going to talk about right now. This is one by Joel Osteen, very popular author, that's entitled Make Every Day a Friday. Want every day to have that 5 o'clock on Friday feeling? Well, Joel Osteen, who is pastor of the largest megachurch in the United States, tackles how to be happier 7 days a week in his book entitled Every Day a Friday. Osteen's Keep Things Simple approach, preaching about hope, happiness, and prosperity, has drawn millions of people to his televised sermons each week and filled stadiums around the country. Our message is about the goodness of God, Osteen told ABC News. It seems just that people come alive when they realize God is for me. He's got a plan for my life, and I can do something real and something great. I can be who He wants me to be. From Scripture and life, Osteen shares principles for happiness. Jesus talked about everyday life, not just doctrine, but how do we live? How do we forgive? How do we keep a good attitude when the economy is down, he said. Now, as a special feature, I've heard any good books lately. I thought I might read a brief excerpt from Every Day a Friday. See what you think about it. Maybe you'll be interested in this book, too, if you haven't read it already. John was 92 years old and blind, but he was just as sharp as he could be when his wife Eleanor went to the Lord. He didn't feel he should live alone, so John decided to move into a nice senior's home. On the morning of the move, he was up and fully dressed by 8 a.m. As always, the elderly gentleman looked impeccable, with his hair perfectly combed and his face neatly shaven. A cab picked him up and took him to the senior's home. John arrived early, as was his habit, and waited more than an hour before a young aide, Miranda, came to show him his new room. As John maneuvered his walker through the hallways, Miranda described his room in great detail. She said, "Sunlight came in through a big window, and there was a comfortable couch and a very nice desk area." Right in the middle of her description, John interrupted her and said, "I love it. I love it. I love it." Miranda laughed and said, "Sir, we're not there yet. You haven't seen it. Hold on just a minute, and I'll show it to you." John said, "No, you don't have to show it to me. Whether I like my room or not doesn't depend on how the furniture is arranged. It depends on how my mind is arranged. Happiness is something you decide ahead of time." As wise old John understood, happiness is a choice. When you wake up in the morning, happiness is a choice. You can choose what kind of day you want to have. You can choose to be in a good mood or you can choose to be in a bad mood. Choose happiness, Osteen says. My purpose in writing this book is to help you arrange your mind so that you can choose happiness each and every day, whatever challenges you may face, whatever circumstances are weighing you down. You can choose your response. How you live your life is totally up to you. It's not dependent on your circumstances. It's dependent on your choices. Abraham Lincoln said, "Most people are as happy as they've decided to be." Honest Abe would have enjoyed a recent study that found happiness increases 10% on Fridays. Well, why is that? People are excited about the coming weekend, so they decide to be happier. They make up their minds on Fridays to enjoy their lives more. I challenge you to let every day be a Friday. Give yourself permission to be happy every day, not just on the weekends, not just when you have a special event, not just when you're on vacation. If you have the right mindset, you can be just as happy on Monday as you are on Friday. The scripture doesn't say, "Friday is the day the Lord has made." It says, "This is the day the Lord has made." And that's just a brief segment there from the book about being about Friday. Treat Every Day as Friday by Joel Osteen. And that was one of the most popular books during the month of January at the North Carolina Library for the Blind and Physically Handicapped. Also in the genre of religion and spirituality is another book that was very popular in January, entitled Love Wins, a book about heaven, hell, and the fate of every person who ever lived. And it was written by Rob Bell. And I'm going to read an article that describes some of the controversy about this particular book. I think you'll find it interesting. Talk about hellfire. One of the nation's rock star popular young pastors, Rob Bell, who is 40 years old, has stuck a pitchfork in how Christians talk about damnation. Bell's book, Love Wins, a book about heaven, hell, and the fate of every person who ever lived, has provoked weeks of fierce infighting among pastors, theologians, and anyone else who scans the Christian blogosphere, where critics rage that he's a hipster heretic. In Love Wins, which was out a couple of years ago now, Bell claims, "Heaven and hell are choices we make and live with right now. God gives us what we want, including the freedom to live apart from God or turn God's way." Living apart would be hell, and turning God's way would be heaven. Death doesn't cut off the ability to repent. In his Bible, Bell sees no infinite eternal torment for things that people do in their few finite lives. Jesus makes salvation possible even for people who never know his name. We have to allow for mystery for people who drink from the rock of faith without knowing who or what it was. And churches that don't allow for this are misguided and toxic. Now, here are a few excerpts from Bell's book to give you a sense of the way he approached this whole subject. A staggering number of people have been taught that a few select Christians will spend forever in a peaceful, joyous place called heaven, while the rest of humanity spends forever in torment and punishment in hell, with no chance for anything better. It's been clearly communicated to many that this belief is a central truth of the Christian faith, and to reject it is, in essence, to reject Jesus. This is misguided and toxic, and ultimately subverts the contagious spread of Jesus' message of love, peace, forgiveness, and joy that our world desperately needs to hear. At the center of the Christian tradition since the first church has been the insistence that history is not tragic, hell is not forever, and love in the end wins. When people say they're tired of hearing about sin and judgment and condemnation, it's often because those have been confused for them with the nature of God. God has no desire to inflict pain or agony on anyone. For some, the highest form of allegiance to their God is to attack, defame, and slander others who don't articulate matters of faith as they do. None of us have cornered the market on Jesus, and none of us ever will. Small wonder that traditionalists call him a false teacher of a Jesus-optional gospel, leading innocents to damnation and a traitor to the evangelical label. In an exclusive interview with USA Today, Bell jokes, "I am not aware that labels are the highest form of goodness and truth." He rebuffs critics who say he presents a Jesus-optional Christianity. Jesus spoke of the renewal of all things. He said, "I have sheep who are not of this flock." Through him, extraordinary things are happening in the world. If saying that gets you banned from the E-Club, so be it. Bell's view is that God is love, that he sent Jesus to show us that love, and that love demands freedom. So making definitive judgments about other people's destiny is not interesting to me. The heart of God is to rescue everyone from everything we need to be rescued from. And those are just a few excerpts from the book entitled Love Wins, a book about heaven, hell, and the fate of every person who ever lived. And that is by Rob Bell, and it is available through the North Carolina Library for the Blind and Physically Handicapped. Another popular genre of books that go out to patrons through the North Carolina Library for the Blind is books of women's interest. So we will change the pace here just a little bit with a book that was very popular during the month of January. And that is a book by the very popular entertainer Ellen DeGeneres. It's called Seriously, I'm Kidding by Ellen DeGeneres. And this is an article that was written by Sarah Han in the Saturday Evening Post recently. Well-loved talk show host and entertainer Ellen DeGeneres hits it big with her third book, Seriously, I'm Kidding. This hilarious volume contains personal stories, solid advice, and outrageous fiction written by the media maven herself. In her latest autobiography, DeGeneres shares her thoughts on becoming a cover girl model, hosting a season of American Idol, and dealing with everyday life, including the best ways to meditate, why you should make a pro-con list, and how hard it is being royalty. She's related to future Queen of England, Kate Middleton. She says, but you really can't always take her seriously, as you know. DeGeneres is as funny as she is genuine as she catches up on what's been going on in her life since her last book, which was published in 2003. She got married, landed her own TV show, and was knighted by the Queen of England. Although the book is a laugh-out-loud recounting of her journey, she clearly puts her heart into her writing, candidly sharing her story with her fans. In addition to the biographical stories, DeGeneres also discusses how best to fall asleep, reading a math book, she says, how to be polite, say g'day mate, a lot, and the secret to becoming a billionaire, make a lot of money and don't spend it. As a longtime Ellen fan, it was great to get the inside scoop with all of her usual humor. She's as funny in her book as she is on the air, if not more so. Every page is better than the next. I race through it, eager to see what else she had to say. That article was written by Sarah Han in the Saturday Evening Post, and it was about Ellen DeGeneres' third book called Seriously, I'm Kidding. Now let's take a look at a couple of other very popular books during the month of January that were by women. The first one I want to talk about here is The Pioneer Woman, Black Heels to Tractor Wheels, a love story by Ree Drummond. That's when I saw him, the cowboy, across the smoky room. I'll never forget that night. It was like a romance novel, an old Broadway musical, and a John Wayne Western all rolled into one. Out for a quick drink with friends, I wasn't looking to meet anyone, let alone a tall, rugged cowboy who lived on a cattle ranch miles away from my cultured corporate hometown. But before I knew it, I'd been struck with a lightning bolt, and I was completely powerless to stop it. Read along as I recount the rip-roaring details of my unlikely romance with a chaps-wearing cowboy from the early days of our courtship, complete with Cows, Horses, Prairie Fire, and Passion, all the way through the first year of our marriage, which would be filled with more challenge and strife and manure than I ever could have expected. This isn't just my story, my love story. It's a universal tale of passion, romance, and all-encompassing love that sweeps us off our feet. It's the story of a cowboy, and wranglers, and chaps, and the girl who fell in love with them. No wonder that was one of the more popular books during the month of January for patrons of the North Carolina Library for the Blind. If you'd like to listen to that one, it's called The Pioneer Woman, Black Heels to Tractor Wheels, A Love Story, and it was written by the author Ree Drummond. That's R-E-E, Ree Drummond. Now let's take a look at a book that was by a very, very popular woman in the entertainment business here in America. It's called I Remember Nothing and Other Reflections by Nora Ephron. You might say Nora Ephron, raised in Beverly Hills, the daughter of New York playwrights who moved west to write screenplays for the likes of Katharine Hepburn and Spencer Tracy, was born to tell stories. As an adult, Ephron worked as a journalist. Later, she made her own name in the movies, writing When Harry Met Sally and directing scripts of her own, including Sleepless in Seattle and Julie and Julia. More recently, the 69-year-old Ephron has been sharing reflections on aging, first in her book I Feel Bad About My Neck, and now in a new collection called I Remember Nothing. In the latter, she spins stories on a potpourri of subjects: divorce, disdain for egg white omelets, and, most especially, memory loss. I have been forgetting things for years, at least since I was in my 30s, Ephron writes in the book's opening paragraph. I know this because I wrote something about it at the time. I have proof. Of course, I can't remember exactly where I wrote about it or when, but I could probably hunt it up if I had to. Ephron's strategy for dealing with forgetfulness is to keep a list of things she refuses to know anything about, which really means she doesn't have to remember them in the first place. I think when you get older, things come along that you know are a test in some way of your ability to stay with it, says Ephron wryly. And when email came along, I was just going to fall in love with it. And I did. I can't believe it now. It's like one of those ex-husbands that you think, what was I thinking? The point is that you can kind of keep up for a while, and then suddenly something comes along and you think, I give up, and I'm never going to tweet. I'm just never going to do that. So far, the list of things Ephron refuses to know anything about include the former Soviet republics, the Kardashians, Twitter, all housewives, survivors, American idols, and bachelors. Karzai's brother, soccer, Monkfish, Jay-Z, every drink invented since the Cosmopolitan, especially the drink made with crushed mint leaves. You know the one. Ephron does admit that technology can help the aging brain remember elusive details. We're saved somewhat by Google, she says. You can, when you're all sitting around the table desperately snapping your fingers in the hopes of remembering the name of that movie that you can't remember the name of, you can make people think that you are not as old as you actually are because you have the technology to find the answer. I Remember Nothing also looks at how people deal with failures in life. Ephron says she believes that flops stay with you in the way that successes never do, whether those flops are failures in work or in personal relationships. These things take up space in your head because it is so possible to lie awake thinking, what should I have done differently? Ephron said this is one of the reasons why Ambien is one of the greatest inventions known to man, because at least stop thinking about stuff. Ephron goes on to say, by the way, there are people who have positive things to say about flops. They write books about success through failure and the power of failure. Failure, they say, is a growth experience. You learn from failure. I wish that were true. It seems to me that the main thing you learn from a failure is that it's entirely possible you will have another failure. That's not to say one should just give up when things don't work out. My religion is get over it, says Ephron, and I was raised in that religion. That was the religion of my home. My mother saying, everything is copy, everything is material. Someday you will think this is funny. My parents never said, oh, you poor thing. It was work through it, get to the other side, turn it into something. And it worked for me. She also credits her parents with teaching her to focus on the funny side of things, even the saddest things. My mother taught me a very fundamental lesson of humor, which is that if you slip on a banana peel, people laugh at you. But if you tell people you slipped on a banana peel, it's your joke, explains Ephron, and you're the hero of the joke because you're telling the story. Despite all the I'm getting old jokes in Ephron's new book, the last chapter, called The O Word, takes on a more elegiac and wistful tone as Ephron considers the serious implications of aging. You do get to a certain point in life where you have to realistically, I think, understand that the days are getting shorter and you can't put things off, thinking you'll get to them someday, she says. If you really want to do them, you better do them. There are simply too many people getting sick, and sooner or later you will. So I'm very much a believer in knowing what it is that you love doing so you can do a great deal of it. For Ephron, there was a moment that helped bring that realization vividly home. She was with friends playing a round of what would your last meal be. Her pick, by the way, was a Nate and Al's hot dog. But my friend Judy was dying of throat cancer, and she said, I can't even have my last meal. And that's what you have to know is, if you're serious about it, have it now, Ephron says. Have it tonight. Have it all the time, so that when you're lying on your deathbed, you're not thinking, oh, I should have had one more Nate and Al's hot dog. And that book was called I Remember Nothing and Other Reflections by Nora Ephron. And that is just about all the time we have for this month's edition of Heard Any Good Books Lately? I'm your host, George Douglas. I certainly hope you enjoyed it. If you would like more information about how to become a patron of the North Carolina Library for the Blind and Physically Handicapped, simply Google or search for North Carolina Library for the Blind, or you can call them directly toll-free at 1-888-388-2460. That's 1-888-388-2460. You can also use the same numbers and website to join the Friends of the North Carolina Library for the Blind and Physically Handicapped. It is that wonderful organization that sponsors this monthly feature on books every month here on the Triangle Radio Reading Service. This program is intended for a print and visually handicapped audience. Heard any good books lately? Will be available right after the broadcast at our website, trianglereadingservice.org. So long until next time.